Having a child changes everything, and having another child changes everything even more. Today, we'll talk about how having children affects how you eat and how you move. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We'll start off the hour with a conversation about how living with a child might change your diet. Dr. Helena LaRouche of the University of Iowa will be here. She's studied how our dietary habits change when we have kids and worked to develop a program to help families improve their diet and exercise habits. Later in the hour, we'll turn to fitness and talk about how becoming a parent might change your exercise routine with Matt Stansel of the University of Iowa. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Having a child is a huge life-changing event. It changes your habits and your priorities. Today, we're going to talk about how it changes the way you eat and the way you move. Later in the hour, we're going to focus on exercise, but we'll start off the hour with diet. Dr. Helena LaRouche is an assistant professor of internal medicine and pediatrics at the University of Iowa. She's here with us today, and she studied how our dietary habits change when we have kids. Hello, Dr. LaRouche.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today. And when you set out to do this study, do a lot of us plan to change our diets when we have kids? Do we have this idea that is going to change how we eat?
There is some data out there that suggests that people plan that they're going to eat more fruits and vegetables. They're going to try and be healthier for their kids, or at least they're certainly planning on trying to feed their kids healthy things. The question is that once they get into actually having the kids and the time pressures and the challenges, is that what really happens? And that's what I was interested in finding out.
Before you did this study, you looked at all kinds of other research that had been done about how our diets change when we have kids. So what were some of the things that you knew going into this?
So going into this study, I had looked at a different group of studies on parents, and there was some data from the NHANES study, and I'd done a study of that looking at comparing parents to non-parents. And what I had seen when I did that study was that the parents were eating a lot more saturated fat than the non-parents. There were some other kind of interview studies that suggested that parents wanted to change their diet. And then there are some studies from Finland and Denmark that suggested that maybe parents' diets were actually better. So given that mix of things, there's not a lot of data out there on it. I wanted to see, well, what would American parents look like? What would it look like if we looked at it in a more longitudinal fashion, if we looked at them before they had the kids and then after, which is a better way of looking at it than kind of one point in time, which is what the other studies had done.
Okay, so exactly what question were you hoping to answer?
So I wanted to know how their diets changed. And specifically, we chose to look at their fast food consumption, their sweetened beverage consumption, and that would be soda or like sweetened fruit drinks sort of things. We also looked at their calories. We looked at their saturated fat, which is the one type of fat that's more linked to heart disease. And then we also looked at their fruit and vegetable intake. Those were the five things that we were able to look at using these data.
And how large a group were you able to look at?
So there were 2,563 adults in the study. They were either African American or white adults, and they started out at baseline. They were anywhere between 18 and 30 years old.
And how long did you follow them for?
So then we looked at their diet again 7 years later. To see how it had changed. And what we did was we looked at the ones who had children during that time period compared to the ones who had not had children during that time period. And we chose people who didn't have any children when they started.
What did you find?
So the good news is that in most things, the parents' diets didn't get worse than the non-parents. There were, unfortunately, The good thing is that both groups were able to decrease her saturated fat some. The parents didn't do quite as well as the non-parents, but I think you have to give them credit for having managed to do it at all. For fruits and vegetables, both groups actually, the good thing is they did increase their fruits and vegetables some. The parents didn't do any better than the non-parents, but they did as well. For sweetened beverages and fast food, there really wasn't any difference. For calories, it looks a little bit like the parents did increase their calories a little more, but it didn't reach what we would say call statistical significance. In other words, we can't guarantee that that wasn't chance. So you would really want to repeat that in another group and see if you saw it again before you were really willing to say that that's true.
How did you count the calories that the people in the study were consuming?
So this was based on the CARDIA study, which is the coronary artery disease in young adults. And they did what are called food frequency questionnaires, both at baseline and at year 7. And basically, it goes through very carefully asking people, how often do you eat bananas? How often do you eat skim milk, drink skim milk? It goes through a large variety of foods and asks them how often they eat different foods. And then from that, they're able to – and how much they eat of it. And so, and then from that, they're able to calculate calories and how many fruits and vegetables they're eating a day. And then there was a separate question that asked them about how often they ate fast food.
I think when a lot of us become parents, when a lot of us have little kids in the house, one of the pitfalls that we fall into is finishing things that are on our child's plate. And I'm curious about whether people would even think about that when they were reporting what they ate, because it's something that happens so quickly and so easily, and you find yourself finishing up a little bit of macaroni and cheese or something like that that you weren't intending to eat.
I think that's very true, and I think that it is very possible that that is not included in this data because people don't think about it when they're counting up how often they ate things. And I do hear that from parents all the time, and I've done it myself. So I think, you know, it's possible that actually parents are eating more calories than they reported, and there may be a bigger difference. Or maybe they're getting a few extra fruits and vegetables in there that they're not remembering. So, you know, data from people who are reporting what they eat isn't perfect. It's the best thing we can do sometimes, you know, short of taping a camera to their head. And even that's not as simple as you might think. But overall, there's the differences we're seeing with what we've got to look at.
All right. And what do you think the implications are of what you found? How does that help us as we move forward? Because I know that you're very interested in the obesity epidemic and trying to make sure that families are healthier.
I think what it says to me is that we need to really think about how we can support families in making changes. That, you know, having a child is what we would call a teachable moment, where people are thinking about wanting to make changes, thinking about wanting to be healthier. So we need to take that opportunity to provide them with the education to know what is healthier to eat, but also to think about what sort of supports they need to be able to actually pull it off.
I'm talking with Dr. Helena LaRouche. She's done a study about how becoming a parent changes or doesn't change your diet. And we want to hear from you. How has becoming a parent changed the way you eat? Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Again, 866-780-9100. I can only imagine that doing a study like this probably creates a lot more questions for you to go and discover what are the burning questions that you have after gathering this information.
I think some of my questions are, you know, where are the places that we can have the most impact on helping families make changes? Where, you know, what are the things that are really either helping them make improve or holding them back, and how can we make changes that would help them the most? And I think that data in some form has to come from the families, and that's part of what we're trying to figure out with some of the other work that we're doing.
You're a mother, right?
Yes.
And you have, how many kids do you have?
I have 1 2-year-old.
All right. And how has your 2-year-old changed the way you eat, do you think?
Well, I think it's a challenge. When before we had a 2-year-old, we had a lot of time to just cook for ourselves, and so we would get home and just cook. If anybody has a 2-year-old, they know that it's hard to cook with a 2-year-old right there. They need your attention, they want your attention, and it's hard to do that. So sometimes it's a challenge to figure out how to make that work. Plus, they're ready to eat right when you get home. So, you know, I've done things like made food and frozen it in toddler size portions so that I always have something for him. But then come 8 o'clock at night, you know, there's always a challenge. Okay, now what are we going to eat? Child's in bed, what are we going to eat? And so I think it's always a challenge to make sure that there's healthier things in the home that we can eat, that there's things we can make faster if we're tired. And it's not perfect. You know, I've had a few extra frozen pizzas here and there than I probably did prior to a child.
Well, and I was thinking in getting ready for the show, I was thinking about sort of the different phases that you go through with a child. Like when my first child was an infant, I'm sure we ordered a lot more pizza than, you know, we had before she was born. And then as she started eating with us, that declined significantly. But, you know, there are changes all the way along. And one of the things that I've noticed about myself is I think in some ways I eat fewer fruits because I'm always saving them for the kids. Like if I have strawberries or I have blueberries, and even if I want to eat them, I think, no, the kids will want those later. And then I just deny myself those. It's really interesting how this changes your life in some minor ways. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And you've also been involved in developing a program to help families improve their habits, both diet and exercise, right? What have you been working on?
So we're working with families in Des Moines, low-income families, to try and help them make changes. And these families, one of the adults is already having problems with their weight or has diabetes. And so these are families that already have children at really high risk of obesity. And so we're trying to help them with a combination of working on what we working with them using what we call motivational interviewing, which is just a process to help them think about what goals they want to change and how they and have them come up with ideas and actions so that we're not telling them what to do. We're helping them figure out what they want to do and then combining that with community support to try and help them, allow them to do that, to try and find the resources in the community that they might need to do that. If they want a bike as a family, we have a resource for bikes. If they need more nutrition education, we have a link for nutrition education, things like that.
We'll talk more about that in just a moment. My guest is Dr. Helena LaRush. She's an assistant professor of internal medicine and pediatrics at the University of Iowa. And you're welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about how becoming a parent changes our diets and changes our exercise habits as well. In a few minutes, Matt Stansel, who's the Assistant Director of Fitness Programs for Recreational Services at the University of Iowa, will be joining us to talk about how kids change our exercise habits and also what we can do to stay fit as parents, a very difficult challenge for many of us. Right now, we're talking about how kids impact our diets. And my guest is Dr. Helena LaRush. She's an assistant professor of internal medicine and pediatrics at the University of Iowa. And we want to hear from you as well. Let us know how having kids has changed the way you eat. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Nicole is on the line from Indianola. Hello, Nicole.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What would you like to add to the conversation?
I was just going to say, there's emotion involved with how you feed yourself and feed your children after you have kids. Because while you're pregnant, you have all this time to eat healthy. And then once you have an infant, you might swing through the drive-thru because you don't want to get her out to go home and make something or go to the store and get something. And then you feel guilty because you're nursing this little person and you just filled your body with junk food. At least that's been kind of my experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and so as time goes on, do you also think about, worry about setting an example too?
Oh, yes. I have a 9-year-old too. And it's like, oh, that was just, I tell you not to eat junk food. And then we just went through the drive up for dinner. So, yeah.
Well, Nicole,
thanks
for calling and sharing your experience. And I'm sure that's true. Not only the emotional swings, but also exhaustion probably impacts how parents' diets change.
Yeah.
You didn't really look into that in this study, though.
Yeah, no, that wasn't really into the study, but any parent will tell you that's definitely, you know, part of the part of the challenge. And I definitely hear what the caller's saying.
When you look at families that you're hoping to help create better habits, do you try to look into some of the things, maybe emotions or maybe exhaustion or maybe busy work schedules, that might create some of those pitfalls that they can fall into?
So that's part of the process that we try and work with them when they eventually get to setting goals. But the first part of the process is to think about the things that they want to do and the things that they feel like get in the way of doing that, and to work through the process of thinking about, well, how do I get around that? And we've added to that, well, are there things that might help me get around that? Is there something out there in the community that would give me that extra boost that would allow me to do that?
And what are some of the things that you're hearing? What are some of the things that people say, you know, I wish I could eat healthy, but I just can't because...
Well, we're just starting, but some of the things I hear when we did some interviews was, you know, these were low-income families, and one of the big things was resources, you know, resources to get fruits and vegetables. They wanted fruits and vegetables, but they're expensive, concerns about them spoiling, time concerns, time constraints, and competing priorities. You know, if you're concerned about your rent and whether you're going to get to stay in your house next week, nutrition may not be on the top of your thoughts. So what we try and do is help problem solve around them and connect them with the things that they need. If they need housing support, maybe they're eligible for something that would help them with that. And we've been working with the food banks. With the food pantries, the DMARC food pantries, to help get them some fruits and vegetables to help them along the way.
We got an email from Nicole. She says, when my daughter was younger, we ate healthier because we wanted her to have a broad palate. As she got older and more underfoot, it was harder, like Dr. LaRouche mentioned, to make healthier food. After realizing how poorly we were eating just to make quicker food, we've returned to trying to make healthier fare. I think it really depends on your phase of life. And we were talking about that a little bit earlier as well. Do you think in the families that you've looked at, in the families that you've talked to, we talked earlier about how even if you have the intention to eat healthier when you have a child, that doesn't necessarily happen. Do you think that a lot of people think, I'm just going to get through the toddler years and then we're going to eat healthier then? Is there this constant intention to do better?
I don't have data on that. I can't tell you from any of the studies and stuff that I've done to say that. I'm sure with most things, when we talk about doing goals and stuff, there's always, I can do it later. That's always an issue. You know, we're all procrastinators, and we're all just trying to get through today to get to tomorrow. So it's certainly, one thing that may be going through parents' heads.
All right. Jamie's on the line in Cedar Rapids at 866-780-9100. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I'm really glad Dr. LaRouche completed this study and is sharing the data with all of us. I think it's great. And it's obviously great information as a parent as well as a community member to be aware that, you know, we've got a lot of boundaries that are kind of set up to prevent people from educating themselves, you know, with regards to the obesity issue. So being a professional, being a young mom myself, having a 1-year-old son as well, I was chuckling at the comment you made, Dr. LaRouche, regarding, gosh, before my son was born, you know, my husband and I would cook all the time. My husband and I find ourselves in that same boat. However, I have found that the crock pot is like my new best friend. So we're still able to eat healthy and have dinner ready to rock and roll for our toddler when I get home from work. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Jamie. And that is so wonderful. I have a crock pot that I never use. I had the best of intentions, but that seems to require more organization in the morning than I have. But obviously, the families that you're working with don't necessarily have the resources to, say, go out and buy a crock pot and get, you know, fresh ingredients to put in it. What are some of the strategies that you can help them use to think about preparing healthier meals?
Well, there are a variety of things you can do. I mean, one of the things we do stress is trying to plan ahead, and which is exactly what the scholar is doing. You know, she's planning ahead and she's putting it together and having it cook while she's gone, which is a great strategy. But other things, you know, we talk about ways to some of the educational things that they do. ISU Extension does a great class, it's the FNUP classes they do, that talk about different things that you can make on a budget and how to use, how to find the things that are in season so they're less expensive. Find the fruits and vegetables that are going to be less expensive and use them to plan ahead with your shopping so you don't end up spending a lot of money on things that you didn't intend. And to plan ahead in your cooking. You know, there are also things that don't require a lot of preparation that you can do. You know, when I need something quick for my son, sometimes he loves cucumbers and tomatoes. All I have to do is take them out and cut them up. They don't have to cook them. I don't have to I can stick them in front of them, and he likes them. There are things that that you can have around that don't require as much preparation. And we talk about having things out that are easy to eat. You know, is there an apple sitting on the counter? If the apple's hidden in the back of the cupboard, people don't see it, they don't eat it. If it's sitting on the counter, the kids go, oh, hey, there's an apple on the counter. Talk about different ways to cook things and use what they do have. Or ways to get low cost items. Crockpots, luckily, are actually not fairly low cost to obtain, versus, you know, buying a food processor or something, which is not going to be within the means of these families.
Well, in our culture, we're obsessed with watching cooking shows, talking about cooking, but a lot of us don't have cooking skills. And you mentioned ISU Extension, and I know they do a lot to help people learn how to cook. But do you find that there are families where no one in the family really has the skills to prepare healthy meals?
There are families that are – we've some families, we've lost that information that people don't – they grow up and they haven't learned how to cook. And that is definitely a barrier. They're like, well, I don't know how to make that sort of food. So that's where we need to go back and help people learn how to cook, help people find things that they're comfortable with, and allow them to cook. And maybe we need to think about other resources for families that aren't all about them preparing everything. Maybe if people need things that they can get quickly for their family, we need to find ways to get them things that they can buy quickly for their family that are healthy as opposed to a McDonald's hamburger. You know, we need to think outside the box too. Also in terms of our the way our society is and our busy society, and maybe we need to find other ways to support parents that aren't always involving them cooking everything.
Right. It can seem like an insurmountable challenge. I'm talking to Dr. Helena LaRouche about how children change our diets and some of the ways that we can work to change our diets for the better to help our kids grow up healthy. And you're welcome to join our conversation as well at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We want to hear about how your kids have changed your diet. 866-780-9100. Sarah is on the line from Kyoto. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for calling. How has your child changed your diet?
I have a 3-year-old, and, you know, like you guys were saying, first when she was born, we didn't eat as healthy because, well, she didn't eat with us. So it was just grab quick, whatever you can. But now that she's gotten older, I've you know, she likes to eat what we eat. So if we eat chips and pizza, then that's what she wants. But if we eat fruits and vegetables, then she'll eat those too. And she has a really, she loves all types of vegetables. She eats pickles and olives and, you know, cucumbers and asparagus and all of that sort of stuff. So with her, it's not an issue of her being picky. It's just us providing it for her. And I have a funny story. When she was two, well, it's not really that funny, but when she was two, I wrote her name and I asked her what it said. And her name is Emma. And she pointed to the M and said, "That's a cheeseburger for McDonald's." Because she associated that with McDonald's, and we didn't even go to McDonald's that often, but she, you know, she would see it as we drove through town, and that really, like, hit me, you know. She's 2 years old and associates M with having a cheeseburger.
Right.
So that's when I was like, wow, you know, I really have to watch what we feed her, because that's what she's going to want.
Yeah, that is fascinating, Sarah. It really points out how we're marketed to and how our kids are influenced by that even before we think they possibly could be.
Exactly. So, yeah, and now I've, you know, we try to eat, we have to eat on a budget. So instead of getting, like, chicken breasts, I get chicken hindquarters, which are, like, well, they're on sale right now for 59 cents a pound. and, you know, baking those and stuff and finding healthier, cheaper ways of eating, too, is something I try to do.
Oh, that's terrific. Sarah, thank you so much for calling and sharing with us.
Thank you, Sarah.
The number to call to be a part of the conversation is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Dr. LaRouche, our kids become so aware so early of brands and you know, in the commercial world of McDonald's and other fast food restaurants, of the things that they see commercials for on television. And any of us who have kids know that it's very difficult to say no all the time. Is that something that you think really influences an unhealthy diet too, that just we see all of this advertising and kids are asking for this stuff?
I think it does. There's actually a study that showed they observed parents with kids under eight in the grocery store and looked to see how often the parents gave into what the kids were asking for. And about 50% of the time they gave into the kids' request for certain foods. So if what the kids are learning to request is high sugar, high fat foods, then they are influencing us through our children. There have been studies from, you know, Robert Wood Johnson that shows that that's what's being advertised at our children. So I think it is something that parents have to struggle against and that we need to be aware of and thinking about how we can change that environment for our parents.
You know, I think back to some of the ideas that I had before I had kids. And, you know, I'd heard all of the studies about how incredibly unhealthy it is to let your kids drink a lot of juice and other high sugar beverages. And then I have a daughter who is a great eater, will eat, you know, wonderful healthy things. Steamed broccoli was one of her first favorite foods, but she hates to drink. and so to keep her hydrated, I found myself doing almost anything I could think of. And those sugary drinks can really insinuate themselves into your diet because, of course, kids will drink them and they like them and they want them. Is that something when you talk to families about their diets, do you see a lot of sugary drinks adding a lot of calories into diets that just are unneeded?
Sugary drinks are definitely an issue, and there are a lot of campaigns out there to try and get them out of the diets of children. Both soda and sweetened fruit drinks and even cutting down on actual 100% fruit juice, because there's a lot of sugar in that. It's not that they can't ever have that, and it's definitely better than soda, but it's still a lot of sugar. So it's definitely an issue. I remember sitting interviewing families in Detroit for a different project and being offered something to drink and seeing and having it be one of those, you know, fruit drinks, those super high sugar fruit drinks, and thinking, yeah, that's what they're drinking. And there even have been studies trying to there are people working on trying to provide just good quality water for people to drink and kids to drink, you know, working water fountains in schools and stuff to make sure that they have access to things like, you know, good tasting water as an alternative to these sweetened drinks that yes, kids will like and they'll drink them. You know, one thing that we advise people to do sometimes is if they're giving juices to dilute the juice down, you know.
Yeah, one of my friend's sons figured that out pretty young, and he would take a drink and say, "This juice is wet." So, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. This is an email from Julie in Iowa City. She says, "We have kids ranging from 10 to 20. We've tried hard to present balanced meals and healthy foods in our home, produce at almost every meal. We limit junk food. My frustration has been in the teen years when the kids start driving and have the ability to go out with friends and eat endlessly." So parents, no matter how hard we try, we're not always in control of that. Dr. LaRush, we are out of time, but thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you very much.
Dr. Helena LaRush is an assistant professor of internal medicine and pediatrics at the University of Iowa. In a moment, we're going to turn from talking about diet to talking about exercise and how having kids changes the way we move and what we can do to move more. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about how becoming a parent can change our habits. We've talked about diet. Now we're going to turn to exercise, how becoming a parent changes the way we move. And with me in the studio now is Matt Stansel. He is the Assistant Director of Fitness Programs for Recreational Services at the University of Iowa. And throughout our conversation, we also want to hear from you. How has becoming a parent and having kids changed the way you exercise in both negative and positive ways? Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Matt, what do we know about how having a child impacts the amount of exercise that a parent gets?
Oh, yeah. There's a positive correlation to family size or the number of children that you have. And it's research has shown there's been a decrease in activity levels for both the child and the parent and or parents. So
you're saying the more kids you have, the less you exercise.
Correct. Due to many constraints, getting children to and from school, different activities, preparing meals. There's a lot of factors that you need to take into account. That shows a limit of activity level for both the children and the parents.
Well, that's really interesting that I have two kids and that lines up very closely to my experience. With one child, I got back in shape really quickly. You know, I worked out through the whole pregnancy and I was able to bounce back and, you know, got back to my fitness level pretty quickly and got the weight level back down as well within a year. And now with two kids, it's been 5 years. My son is almost five and I'm still not there.
So
it's a huge change. And, you know, just because they never slept at the same time, they always needed something after that change. So I can understand how the more kids you have, the higher the impact would be.
Correct. There's also some other contributing factors. Both children and their parents are more likely to be active if both parents are active. Now, if you have one person that's mainly the caretaker for the children is more than likely to be inactive, but their spouse or partner is active, the children tend to be a little bit more active than when you have parents that are both sedentary or both inactive. So if you can get the parents, both parents to be active, there's a higher chance that both you and the children will be active.
So how do you combat that? Obviously, that's something that a lot of people want to do. We don't want to become sedentary. But, you know, when it comes to a choice between giving your child attention and exercising, most of us will come down on the giving your child attention side of that. So what are some of the ways that, that people who have small children in their lives can incorporate exercise?
Yeah, before I hit that topic, I think it's important to know the guidelines, you know, how much activity both the children and adult should get before I kind of
speak. Okay, so what are those guidelines?
Yes, for all adults, they should be getting 150 minutes of moderate aerobic activity per week. That 150 minutes can be broken down however the adult chooses. But at minimum, you need to be doing them in bouts of 10 minutes. So you could go 3 days a week for 50 minutes. You could go, you know, 5 days a week for 30 minutes. But they need to accumulate 150 minutes of moderate activity. You can also do vigorous activity, which is going to be a little bit less time consuming, but it's at a higher intensity. And we're looking for about 75 minutes for the adult. You can combine those two at the same time. Essentially, every minute of vigorous activity is going to equal 2 minutes of moderate activity. And when I say moderate, I'm talking on a scale of 0 to 10. It's called a Borg rating of perceived exertion. So 0 being rest, 10 being kind of that maximal effort. We're looking about a 4 or 5.
Okay, and so give me an activity that, that would fall into that range.
It's going to be independent on the person's cardiovascular system. Another way to gauge that would be, say you're on a treadmill. If I were to have a conversation with you, you should be able to have a fluent conversation with me without having to take deep breaths in between phrases. Another way to gauge that, if I ask you to sing a song during that moderate activity level, you should be able to sing a song completely without having to deep breaths in between phrases, words, or what have you. So that's kind of what moderate kind of briefly is described as. On a scale of 0 to 10, about a 4 or 5.
So a jog or a brisk walk.
Yeah. Another good example, if I told you to exercise at moderate and I had Lance Armstrong, asked him to exercise at moderate, he's going to be working probably a little bit harder than probably both of us. To be honest. So it's,
that was generous of you. Thank you.
So it's really going to be independent on the person's cardiovascular system. Okay. So I'm not telling you need to walk on a treadmill at 3 miles per hour or walk on a treadmill or a bike or what have you at 4 miles per hour, 5 miles per hour. It's going to be independent of the person's own cardiovascular system. So we like to use that Borg rating of perceived exertion, that scale 0 to 10, kind of makes it a little bit more easier. Okay. Also included in that cardiovascular training, 150 minutes or the 75 or a combination of the two, adults also need to get 2 days of that strength training in. We're looking for the range of about 8 to 12 repetitions, 2 to 3 sets for the whole entire body. 2 days, you can break it. You could do 2 full body workouts. You could do an upper body day one day and then a lower body one day, but at least 2 minutes of strength training. And those guidelines are put out by the Department of Health and Human Service, Healthy People 2010 guidelines. You can also go to www.cdc.gov, and they got these same guidelines on there. And that all these recommendations are to maintain your health. This is not for weight loss or improvements in strength or cardiovascular endurance. This is to maintain your health. So if you're looking to cut weight, get stronger, or what have you, you're going to have to go above and beyond those recommendations. Those are set for adults. Children are a lot different. Children, we expect or we're looking for 60 minutes per day, moderate to vigorous activity. Same kind of Borg scale, that 0 to 10, moderate, about a 4 or 5, vigorous 6 to 7. Including in that 60 minutes per day, we need 3 days of strength, muscle strength training, and also 3 days of bone strength training. So a lot of impact things like jumping jacks, jumping, stuff like that, help develop the bones, get them stronger, more dense.
But kids do this through play, not necessarily through working out.
Correct. It's mainly done through play. I'm not ever going to recommend a 4 or 5-year-old to start bench pressing or squatting or what have you. Most of that is done through play. One kind of disadvantage to that play is we've seen over time obesity rates have increased for both adults and children. One of the main factors of that is screen time. the amount of time children are spent in front of a cell phone, a Game Boy, iPad, computer, what have you. On average, children ages 3 to 18 spend about 4 hours a day viewing that screen time.
And it just immobilizes them.
Correct. They become sedentary. They're sitting there twiddling around, doing whatever they're doing, but sedentary. They're not moving at all. So an important thing is to try to get people moving. There's a lot of limitations to getting those 150 minutes a day or 60 minutes a day for children based on age, gender, ethnicity, disability, stuff like that. If you can't get that 150 minutes or that 60 minutes, get something. Any activity is better than no activity. So we use those guidelines as a foundation to help maintain our general health. But if you have a certain condition, disease, or what have you, any activity is better than none.
The idea of trying to fit these activities in, I think, is very challenging for parents, and we will talk more about that. We want to hear about you as well. How have you managed to fit some of these activities into your life at 866-780-9100? Before we move on to that, though, you mentioned the need for strength training and the need for cardiovascular training, and I'm wondering, are there statistics that show us where parents tend to struggle the most? Because, for example, and just from my own life, with two kids, I found that basically what I could do is get out and really walk and, you know, ride the bike, pulling them in a trailer, or walk with them in the double jogger. Strength training really was limited to lifting the kids. Do we tend to decline more in strength training as we have small kids in the house?
Yeah, and not just having more children in the house. In general, people are more apt to do that cardiovascular training, whether it be walking, running, biking, swimming, what have you, and neglect the strength training component. There's been a lot of push for these recommendations, get it out in the open, but a lot of people are missing that strength training component of their activity.
Okay, so let's talk about some ways to fit in that exercise if you're home with kids, or if you have kids and maybe they go to daycare during the day while you're at work, but the times when you're at home, you're there with the kids. Because I found a real struggle for me, and why it's taken so long for me to get back in shape with two kids, is I couldn't get up before them because my son was a terrible sleeper. And so without that time to work out, it was a choice of, do I plunk them in front of the television so I can get a workout, or do I just not get it done? So, we find ourselves making a lot of compromises. So what are some of the ideas that we can help fit that activity in without making compromises that might hurt our kids?
One important thing, not just on the physical activity, getting more time, both you and your children being active, bringing both you and the child into an activity that you guys can enjoy together, of course, is going to help out that physical activity component, make you healthier, stronger, faster, what have you. But it's also a time for you guys to bond. So finding activities which both of you can do are really great. Iowa City has tons of great resources here for becoming more active. We got more bike paths. We got a lot more parks in other communities. One good example is bringing your kids to the playground. A lot of times you're going to see your parents just observing or watching their kids play. Get out there with them. Use the monkey bars. Use those seats. Do dips, push-ups, lunges. So it's a time to bring the family together, not only for activity, but it's also going to help out psychologically as well. Spending more time with your kids, stuff like that. Use the playgrounds. The university's got great resources at the Recreational Service Department. There's tons of programs where you could essentially drop your kids off for a program. We got hawk shootouts, swimming and diving clubs, school of the wild, tennis programs, wildlife camps, different fitness programs. And then Lake McBride, you can rent canoes, paddle boats, stuff to where you can bring the family together. But some of those activities are geared only for children. But it's a safe, fun, friendly environment. You can take your kids. You know they're going to be supervised. They're going to get something out of it. And at the same time, you could go hit the gym up at the exact same time. So there's a lot of different ways, I guess, you can go about it. Bringing your kids to a structured, safe, friendly environment where you can also at the same time drop them off and then get your workout at the same time. Other things that a parent can do at home, just take them outside, make up an obstacle course, do bear crawls, walks, lunges, sprints, and not just kind of coach the kid, get out there and do it with them. So I think bringing the family together where they can be physically active together can both help the parent and the children become more active.
All right. So you just have to get over your inhibitions and yes. get out there and play.
Too. Correct.
I have found that in my household, you were talking about screen time earlier. As long as I'm firm and I say no to the television, my kids are active. It's almost like magic.
Yeah.
As long as the screen is not doing something, they're moving.
Correct. A lot of times if you put the TV on, you'll see your kids locked in on those programs. But during those commercials, I know the talk you had before about nutrition, sometimes they do get entrapped into those commercials and stuff. But those are the times when children and adults should be more active. During those breaks or commercials, get up, dance around, do something active. I know TV and those screen time things are used a lot because of time constraints. Maybe you're making dinner and you need to have the child sit down, but get those kids up during the commercial breaks. Get them to be a little bit more active than they were before.
After my daughter was born, I was able to do a lot of exercises with her, and I would actually use her as a little bit of resistance. She loved to work out with me. As she got older, then I just became a human jungle gym, and it got to be too hard. You know, I was afraid that I would get hurt if I was going to do yoga, if I was going to do strength work, and then, you know, the other child came along and made that even harder. Do you have some recommendations for ways that parents can work out with their very small kids and get a benefit for both parent and child?
Oh, yeah. Adding that infant or child is going to put increased demand on your body. Before you embark on something like that, I would, of course, recommend getting talking to you with your primary physician about what you're about to embark on. There's tons of safe and appropriate classes, especially for infants and their mother, yoga for mothers and stuff like that, that it's going to add added resistance. I mean, you got a 7, 8, 9, 10-pound child with you. It's going to make that workout even harder. I would suggest going to a professional exercise specialist before you embark on this rather than just trying, you know, yoga for you and your baby at home. Of course, I'd always recommend talking with your doctor beforehand.
The take-home message that I'm getting from you is that we just need to be mindful and make it a priority, even if we don't have the time, just to stay moving. Do you have any recommendations for how to change that mindset and incorporate that into everyday life?
Yeah, exercise is tough. For both someone that's been doing it for years or just starting out, you just got to stick with it, make a plan out those short-term goals. I'm going to walk an extra block this week, or I'm going to use the stairs for a couple flights instead of using the elevator. Maybe every email that I do at work, I'm going to do 10 squats at my desk, or every time I'm walking to the fax machine, I'm going to do an extra lap around the office. So making those small, very small changes as opposed to having a not very smart goal is like next month I'm going to run a marathon. You got to start out small and keep building upon those successes.
Matt, thank you for your time today.
Yep, thank you.
Matt Stansel is the Assistant Director of Fitness Programs for Recreational Services at the University of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Technical support comes from, well, Dennis Reese again today. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, the Wellmark 8035 play-in presented by IPR Studio One. We're going to talk to the three finalists tomorrow. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News.